Welcome to the Power of Synergy. I'm your host, Gabrielle Cardona. And today you can see the background. I'm actually working at the King County Library, the Burien station, location, the Burien location. And I'm looking at a lot of the logistics on my computer here. So I'll be looking back and forth. But what I'm going to be discussing with my viewers and listeners today is my GoFundMe project. For the last few weeks, I've been covering the different dynamics of what I'm hoping to achieve, as well as the details of the participants who are contributing to my, well, for lack of a better word, charity. It's a fundraiser because I want to help the people who are living in the Phoenix, the greater Phoenix area, locations of Halley, UMOM, which is the same. One's just for single women, one's for women with children, as well as CAS and Human Services Campus. These are supposedly just nonprofit organizations, and they're supposed to help people by giving them things that they need, the resources that they need to not live on the street anymore. That's what they claim. Well, you know what? I accidentally had to land there for a couple of days about a year ago. Just I thought, well, as soon as I get into my hotel that I reserved, and I thought, you know what? These people are extremely insane. They're completely toxic. Synergy. That's what I've been doing for 16, almost 17 years now in my coaching business. I help people create amazing and powerful things for themselves, for others, with others. The only way that we can be very successful as people with others is by coming together with them, working with them, embracing the dynamics of synergy. Or what synergy? You know what it is? It's what we create when we come together with other people. It's what happens to our energy and our dynamic, our personal power. When we embrace each other and support each other and cooperate with each other, that means we come together and we work together. Our power augments. It exponentially increases. Yeah, and we got two people. Once we got four people, once we've got eight people, what we create is infinite. My business used to be Infinity Life Coaching, because I always told people the possibilities are infinite when we come together, when we cooperate. Life coaching to me meant teaching people how to be successful in their life and come together to make their relationships healthy. Okay, well, people said you need to find a niche. You got to find an area of expertise where you can teach people something more specific than life in general. And I thought, okay, well, what has come up for me in my coaching business for the last few years has been relationships, dynamics, communication, conflict resolution, problem resolution, actually being able to define what the problem is so you can immediately take care of it and do something about it, fix it with a proactive, healthy solution. Yeah, that was kind of cool. But when I went to this place that claimed to help people who were in genuine need of something that could be community resources, it could be money, just it could be help getting a place to live, I could not believe, first of all, CAS, what they had done to me, what they had told me, but more importantly, what they hadn't told me and what they hadn't done for me. They claimed to make all of these great changes for people and being an area of resource and support to help you get out of a homeless situation. Yeah, no, they didn't. They actually did things to undermine me, to contradict me, and to prevent me from reaching the goals that apparently I had to create with my caseworker who was for CAS, but I was in the HSC program. I didn't know that until about 6 months into the program, that I was working through two different entities, but they're both considered charities, so they're nonprofit. When I actually made complaints to the Better Business Bureau about what they were saying and what they were doing, and again, more importantly, what they weren't saying and what they weren't doing, they said, yeah, we can't do anything to rectify the situation because they're not a profit generating business. And I said, whoa, okay. Then we need to take a look at that, because as I was filing complaints, official complaints that they're called grievances, at these institutions individually, personally delivering my complaints to the higher ups, that you know every organization, profit or nonprofit, has a structure of who is in charge of which department. I would turn these things in, and they would say, "Oh, okay, we'll let them know you're not happy." And I said, "Okay, but I've written here on the paper exactly who I am, exactly the problem, exactly the solution that I want. This is, you know, what's happening as a result of," like, "Oh yeah, we'll get back to you." They never got back to me, and I couldn't believe how angry I was, not only at their lack of power to get things done, but their indifference. They genuinely didn't care. And as I was looking at the other residents who lived there, they had really horrible attitudes. They would do things to kind of break the rules that I went and looked at the rules that they weren't even there on the terms and conditions to stay in these places. You have to do this and this and this and this, and you cannot do this and this and this and this. And then I was looking, I said, "What happens if you do? What's the consequence for that?" That wasn't specified. Okay, so then I thought, well, what happens when the people who work here don't do their part of their job? Well, there was no next step specified. There was no recourse. The residents didn't have any right to say, "No, this isn't good enough. I'm taking it to the next level because I either want this person removed or castigated in some way to make sure this doesn't happen again." Okay, so I said to myself, now, I want to change this. I really want to change this. I actually said to my husband, I said, "Look, I just came down here from Seattle, Washington to Phoenix because I needed to find a place to live. Number one, I had several different agencies who were giving me job offers, and I thought, great, so I don't have any income, real concern, but I need to figure out which area of the city would be best for me to live in." So when I found these charity organizations, asking them questions, seeking out help and support, and they just basically said, "Well, no, you can't really have that." Or, "Well, you know what? That won't work." Or, "Well, you can have this job, but then you can only qualify to live in this kind of community, but then the community that you live in will not allow you to have this kind of a job." I said, "What the hell are you talking about? How can you live with yourself knowing full well that I've complied with every single thing that my case manager," sometimes they call it a caseworker, "my case manager was telling me to do?" It was a long and slow, drawn out process. And I said, "Okay, look, it's been 3 months that I've been living on the floor, on the really horribly hard, unsanitary tile with a very, very thin sheet on a mat. It's like a yoga mat, okay, in front of the door with it open in the rain, because you know I have epilepsy and doing that will make me have seizures, because you really don't want me to get a job. Okay, so now that I have the job, where are you going to send me to live?" And they said, "Well, you kind of have to find that out yourself." I said, "That's not true. Why are you doing this?" And they said, "Because you keep filing complaints and they don't like you. The higher ups don't like you. So they're not ever going to actually let you fully utilize the system." Okay. So I said, "We've got a lot of issues here. How can I actually help the people living there? First of all, to not feel overwhelmed, because I promise you, ladies and gentlemen, go in there, go into CAS. It's on 3rd Avenue and Washington. A little south of Washington, maybe Jefferson. I don't remember the exact address, but it's right down there. All you have to do is Google CAS. Walk in there. You will see in the bathrooms feces and urine and blood all over the walls. You will see there is absolutely there's mold. There's mold. There's no hygiene area for the people in the places of hygiene, like the restrooms and the showers. Ooh, the showers are really gross too. And the fact that the air conditioning in the summer, no. Heat in the winter, no. Okay, why can't we have a pillow? I actually needed a pillow. That was something I felt the need to, you know, complain about. Well, you know what? Beggars can't be choosers, so shut the hell up. Okay? Okay. So what I said to a couple of people, I said, "Look, I'm filing these grievances. I am taking pictures and I'm getting recordings. I'm going to file a lawsuit. Even if it's just a charity organization, I'm going to get this done. And I'm going to get the people who live here as my support group. And we can actually get a class action lawsuit." I found a lawyer and I got some research about what really does it take. Well, yeah, you know what? We can get some things taken care of, but we're going to need a certain number of people. We're going to need more people saying the things that you've said, because one person, sorry, it's just not enough. So I said, "Okay, Okay, so we've got several different issues that I want to address and effectively resolve. Because you know what? If you deal with one little facet of something and then you do not resolve the course of the issue, the source of the issue, really, at its very fundamental beginning, you're not doing anything. Maybe you're putting a Band-Aid on a symptom. You're not truly resolving the problem. So I thought, okay, these are the three things that I have issue with. Number one, the living conditions there are heinous. They are heinously horrifying. Okay. They're very, very violation of every single health code in the state of Arizona and the city of Phoenix. Number two, the organization itself is set up in a way that literally sabotages the success of the participants in the program, almost guaranteeing that they will not be able to get out of that living situation. Being homeless, you need a job and a residence. Well, they literally set it up so you can't have it. But to me, the biggest issue I had was the people who worked there proactively doing things to make the people's lives miserable. The people who lived there were upset all day, every day, simply because they either couldn't have things like food and clothing and shelter, heat, right? At medical attention, my seizures were not addressed. They weren't taken care of. I happened to have something on the side on the down low that they didn't know about because I wasn't really homeless. And I said, well, geez, I could have died here. I literally could have died here if I had been truly homeless and unemployed. We need to get rid of the employees who do know that there are things they can do and they choose not to do it. We need to change the system that the employees are working within in order to facilitate the success of the residents. Those three things: the residents, the system, and the employees. Well, okay, so I'm thinking, I'm an INTP and I'm a relationship coach, but I'm a life coach. I'm a success coach. Now, I'm thinking, what could we possibly do to get the source and the cause and the effect, the entire issue resolved without undermining or undoing the success of the participants, whether that would be the community around the homeless residents, the residents themselves, or the employees? Because believe it or not, as many horrible people as there are in these places, there are a few amazing ones. When you go to them on the down low and say, hey, what's going on here? What did you see what that jerk off just did? They say, I know, and it's horrible, and I want to puke. I wish there was something I could do. Really? Well, who else that works here is like that? Who else wants to help? And they say, I don't know, we're not allowed to talk about it. Don't tell anybody I said that I wanted to help people. Okay, so what I came up with is I want to get the residents there who want their life better a good life coaching program, because it's one thing to offer an isolated service. It's quite another thing to employ people with judgment and confidence and insight and wisdom about how to manage their own life. I'm going to give you the description of what I want to offer the residents as my coaching program. I actually got my business certified with the Better Business Bureau. I'm accredited in the city of Phoenix with the Better Business Bureau. And I have people in those places, in those shelters, who say, if you coach me, I will absolutely love you forever. And I will take the information that you give me. And I say, but here's the thing. We need to get a class action lawsuit. The lawyer said, yeah, you're one good person and you're very convincing in what you have to say. We need 19 more people saying what you said. Okay, so what I would like to do then is for the people who finish the coaching program, get them a recording device. The one that I have is actually in storage. I don't have it with me, but it's just about this big. It's very small and it's hand. And it's got great sound. And that's the key. That's the key, is having the good sound that can be recorded. Because I had to keep it in my pocket sometimes. Sometimes I would have it in my hand covered, but it was always a very good quality recording. And then the pictures that they would take, that I would take, did take, would be great quality pictures with their own devices. So if I gave them those coaching classes that would help us get them equipped and confident, proactively involved enough to, number one, have the employees removed who really need to not be there, and that includes the security guards. PES security is horrible. And then have those people who are actually in those charities in the higher ups go, wait a minute, this is what our employees are doing. We need to get rid of this, and we need to get the logistics of the charity programs fine-tuned so that when people come in, they will have the stepping stool that they need to get their life better. They will have the support system that they deserve to have if they are working to get their life better, not continuing to perpetuate the negativity and toxicity that got them perhaps there. Maybe it just wasn't time and unforeseen occurrences that got them there. They may have an actual issue. Yeah, they can get that issue resolved because they can go somewhere proactively more constructive and more productive. If you would like to help, really, you can help one of three different ways. You can help by contributing to the charity that I started on GoFundMe. It's entitled Homeless Shelter Victims. You'll see my picture there and a description of what I'm doing, how I'm doing it, and who is participating. You can contribute. You can make a monetary donation about towards one of three facets. Number one, to the participants, the homeless shelter participants who want the life coaching, or to the recording devices and the books that they need in order to actually get involved in this legal suit, or towards the legal suit itself, which is going to cost money. At some point, you're going to have to pay something in order to get the system better. What would you like to help the people or the city of Phoenix do to get people off of the street? That's what matters. Now, do you want to know what I would actually teach them? It would be a 12-hour course. Usually my seminars are 90 minutes, 60 to 90 minutes, but a class is 1 hour. So what I have is a 12-hour course. It's a condensed version of some of the life coaching that I give to people individually, because it really is a matter of one-on-one coaching. I'm working with you personally to give you very, very specific personalized information. Well, in a class of up to 20 people, I need to give very broad general principles that they can employ in their life. If they do want life coaching, anybody who gets involved in the life coaching and participates in the class action lawsuit against these homeless shelters can then have a significant discount on my individual coaching that would be separate from what they do in the classroom with a bunch of other people that they might not want to air out their dirty laundry to. But most importantly, again, you can complain about the homeless people and how they're ruining the city. Well, you can help empower them to stop whatever it is that they're doing that's impeding their progress, and more importantly, start doing something that will bring them the success that they want and need and deserve if they're willing to do the work. Okay, so I only have about 40 minutes left, so I'm going to kind of go over the substance, the content of what I would be giving these people quickly. If you have other questions, and that's the other thing, go ahead and go to synergyrelationshipcoaching.bbsradio.com. Okay, synergyrelationshipcoaching.bbsradio.com. The power of synergy.bbsradio@gmail.com, or the power of synergy@gmail.com. Sorry, I'm trying to remember the two different, because one is strictly for the campaign, the fundraiser campaign, and the other one is about the system and the program itself that I have for the people who decide to participate. Okay, so let's start here. The first part of what I teach people is the dynamics of their personality. Now, a lot of people have heard of Myers-Briggs Type Indicator Personality Profile System. It's widely accepted, literally worldwide accepted, highly acclaimed, because it is so accurate and it is so helpful for people when they have something that they want to improve. The nice thing is it explains your nature to you, not just your behavior, because you know what? Your behavior is only what you do. Your personality is how you do it and why you do it. Because you know what? One of the first things I realized as a coach, a lot of people are doing things that are not their true nature. And so when they answer the questions to the personality test, they base their answers on what they currently do in their life, Well, guess what? About half of what they're doing is not their true nature. So the four dynamics, and I'm going to give you the overview. It's about a 200 question test. I'm going to answer the general principles of the first letter of your personality is about your social energy. You are either an introvert or an extrovert. Now, a lot of people have a problem with this simply because they say, I'm both. Ambivert became a very popular social concept in the last decade or so because everybody, yes, does some things in an introverted way. They do some things in an extroverted way, but you do have an inclination more towards one than the other. But if you are a healthy person, you have to learn to master both. Okay, so let's just ask four questions. And if you're not sure at the end, I might throw in a fifth one there. The number one question is, who do you call your friend? Okay, you might like a lot of people in your life. I'll use the example of myself and my husband. Okay, I've been involved in 9 different congregations with the same organization, but I've been in different cities. And so I've literally gone to the different churches of that organization. And I know, let's see, some of them have about 200 people, some of them have about 100 people. And when I actually say to people, I know 1,500 people, I'm not kidding. And yes, I've got a great security guard coming in, so you might see him in the background. But okay, so I know 1,500 people, but you know what? I've only got about 5 friends because for me, I could like 1,000 of those 1,500 people, but I am only a friend with someone who is very intimately involved in my life that I trust, that I respect, that I feel a connection with. And from birth to death, I'll probably only have a total of 10 friends, but I can get along with and enjoy hundreds of people. My husband, you know what? He knows probably 4,000 people because he was born in Mexico and he traveled all around Mexico and all around the United States and he's 56. Yeah, if he knows 2,000 people, 1,000 of them are his friends because you know why? He likes them. They get along. That's very extroverted. Okay, which brings me to the next question. If you had a special event, would you want everybody you know there? It could be for your career. It could be for family. Would you want everybody there or would you only want special people in your life there? An introvert says, no, if it's special, it's only for special people. An extrovert would say, hey, if you know somebody, go ahead and bring them. And you know what? As long as I don't have to pay necessarily for all of the food, someone else can pay for the food. The more the merrier. That's an extrovert. Okay. Yeah. So then let's talk about this. If you were in a large group, let's just say hypothetically, yeah, there was a reason to get up on stage and perform. How much would you want to perform just to be the center of attention of all those people? You know what? An extrovert would love it. And they would be very comfortable in the limelight. And yeah, an introvert would say, that's okay. We're going to probably get some good entertainment. And yeah, and if I was there in front of everybody, an introvert would say, I'm exhausted when I'm done. You know what? An extrovert would say, I got so much energy. I got so much momentum that by the time it's all over, it could be going 4, 5, 6 hours. I actually have to wind down because I'm so excited with all the social stimulation. And then the last question, I'm just going to go ahead and ask it. How much does it bother you to have to raise your voice to be heard? And how much does it bother you to be interrupted? You know what? An introvert would say, I shouldn't have to talk over people in order for them to hear me. You know what? An extrovert doesn't even realize they've turned up the volume. And you know what? An introvert, when they're interrupted, they'll stop and let someone else finish. And they're going to get a little irked on the inside. You know what? An extrovert's okay being interrupted because they're probably busy interrupting people themselves. You know what? That's just the dynamics of a conversation. Okay, trust me, ladies and gentlemen, if you're honest with yourself, you know naturally what you prefer more. That's not necessarily an indication of what you're currently doing. And that could be the cause of the problem. And that's what I want to teach people in the shelter. That's just the first letter. You're either an E or an I, extrovert or introvert. The second letter of your personality is S or N, sensory or intuitive. Now, the reason that the intuitive starts with an I, but they, you know, chose the N instead of the I is because the I is already for introvert. So the second letter for your personality is either S or N. Well, that's about where you focus your attention. When we have 5 senses, We've got our eyes and our nose and our mouth and our hearing and our touching. And even when we're asleep, they're always turned on. We hear and smell and taste and touch and want to see everything. And but then we have a part of our mind, right? A part of us internally that goes, okay, I'm getting abundance of information from all of these different stimulations. And so we have to put these pieces together. Oh, I had a thought. I just had a thought. The question is, are you more focused, conscientiously focused on what's going on around you, outside of you, or are you more focused on what's going on inside of you? That could be your thoughts. I'm sorry, what? Okay. If you're inside more than outside of yourself with your cognitive functional focus, you're intuitive. If you want, oh, but you know what? Okay, that's, you need some questions. Let me ask you some questions. Number one. A great thing about sensors, and again, my husband, very ESTP, they remember everything visually. They remember facial features, they remember landmarks, they remember, heck, they remember just the streets. And so one of the questions I ask people is, if you've only been somewhere once, right, and it was a very brief walking around the block, what are the odds that you'd get lost trying to find it again? You know what? An intuitive. They could be walking around the block and they would get lost because they're not aware of all of these little details, the minutiae details, aside from the street names. Sensors are very, very aware and they do remember their sense of direction because, again, when they change direction, their mind re-engages but stays externally focused. The second question I like to ask people about being sensory or intuitive is, well, if you know that there's something in front of you that's kind of unpleasant and you're imagining, oh God, that looks really bad. It smells kind of funky. Okay. An intuitive person would say, that's okay. I can see it's not something I would enjoy. A sensor would say, give me the stimulation. I really do want the experience. Even if it's a bad experience. Bad experience for a sensor is still a very good thing. Yeah, and that's why they are so hyper aware. They do want to touch and smell and see and hear things, and especially taste things. Okay, well, the third question that I ask people is, how literally do you take things? Okay, when I ask you, where are you now? There's actually a commercial on YouTube. It says, what do you want? The man says, I want my life to have meaning. I want to find a job that has not work. And I want to have some direction and people giving. And he goes, I'm meant for lunch. Okay. If people are very literal, then they're probably sensory. If they're figurative and metaphorical, then they're probably intuitive. And here's the last one. When it comes to speculating and hypothesizing, 2 weeks from now, let's see, I'll probably be doing this in this place because I'm planning out what's going to happen. And so, yeah, on the 14th, I'll probably be doing this with this person. Yeah, probably that's what I'll be doing. And the sensor would say 14 days from now. Geez, that's like 700 hours from now. There's no way to know. So many different things in life going to be happening between now and then. Don't ask me to think that far ahead. That's impossible to know. Okay, so what do you think you are? The first one is either E or I, extrovert or introvert. The second one is S or N, sensory or intuitive. Okay. The third one is about how you make decisions. Now, you've got all the stuff that you're creating and you're accumulating and you're processing, and now it's time for you to do something. Well, you're either a thinker or a feeler. Now, some people have a really hard time with this simply because the inflection there, the suggestion, innuendo there is, well, if you're a thinker, you're smart. And if you're a feeler, you're emotional. Wrong. In the context of MBTI, a thinker is someone who makes decisions based on logical, rational, intelligent information. They really don't want things to not make sense. But a feeler is someone who makes their decisions based on the personal emotional needs of other people. They feel what other people are feeling and they prioritize the feelings of other people, even when something doesn't make rational sense. Because you know what? In life, sometimes the right thing isn't going to make sense. Yeah, no, a thinker would never say that. A thinker would say if it doesn't make sense, then it's either the not the right thing to do, or you're just stupid and you need to work out some stuff, because if it's not making sense for you, it means you are at fault. You need to reconcile the irrational, illogical thing that you're processing. And a feeler would say, no, if it makes someone happy, that makes total sense to do it. Okay, so let me ask you some questions. If you're not real sure, just inherently which one is more naturally easy for you, one of the questions is, if you had to give someone bad news, how hard would it be for you to be the bearer of bad news? You know what? A feeler would say, it would rip my heart out because I know it would hurt their heart. And a thinker would say, well, but you know what? That's just part of life. And sometimes bad news is part of what they have to learn to deal with. I can care about how they feel, but I'm not going to let how they feel change what I do. Second one is, well, if you had to make a choice between yourself and someone else, you know what? What would you be more comfortable, more inclined to do? If someone else wanted something that literally took away your happiness, and you said, okay, that's okay, because you know what? My happiness comes from making you happy. Then you're probably a feeler. A thinker would say, no, if you're going to take away my happiness, that is a stupid thing to do. Got to find a way that we can both make it work out without being stupid in the process. Okay, that's pretty black and white. And again, feelers say, you know what? For every rule, there is an exception. For every, because it's about people and people are the exception. There is a human factor that cannot be described or identified and put into a box. Okay, so one of the things that I ask people, just because they say, well, I'm both. No, one is easier for you, it's more natural for you, it is more enjoyable for you. Okay, which one is it? So I ask people this question. Let's say you had to perform life-saving surgery, literally on someone that you love. They are sitting there right in front of you, and the doctors, the paramedics said, we can't do it. You're going to have to do it. But we're going to give you a book that you can read. You'll have all the time in the world to do it. Their life is not on the line, as far as a time frame. And you will have all of the tools to do everything that you need to do. You just need to figure out how to use the tools. And what is the problem, and how's it? The only problem, the real problem here, is that there's no anesthesia. They are going to be in pain for everything you do, even if it's the right thing to do, it will inevitably cause them pain. The question is, how comfortable would you be reading a book, engaging on an academic level to go, okay, so what this is the organ? It's okay. It's okay. You're going to be okay. Okay, and you could soothe the person while you are being logistically, analytically rational, and then using this and going, you know what, it's surgery, it's gonna hurt, deal with it. A feeler would say, no, I wouldn't even be able to read the book because all I would want to do is take their pain away. I would not have the cognitive ability to compartmentalize someone else's pain out of my cognitive focus. Yeah, all right, that one's a pretty black and white question. How intelligently, logically, rational are you when someone else is suffering? If it's good for you, you're a thinker. If it's tough for you, you're a feeler. Okay, so now the last one, the fourth letter of your personality. Oh, so that's T or F, thinker or feeler. The last part of your personality is how you carry out those decisions that you made, those either thinker or feeler decisions that you've made. How do you carry them out? The last letter is either P or J. And the question is perceiver or judger. Hold on, let me scroll down here. A perceiver is someone who is spontaneous and flexible and fly by the seat of their pants. They are pretty laid back people. Judgers are people who are structured and consistent. They're organized. They really do appreciate and comply with the rules, the laws, and all of the things that need to happen, the way that they happen in detail. They say, great, I know now what I'm supposed to do, but more importantly, what I'm not supposed to do. And that makes me feel good about the decisions that I've made as a thinker or feeler, because now I know how to carry out the decision in the best way for society. Well, people say, yeah, I like some rules and I like some spontaneity and flexibility and All right, so let's just ask the questions. I've got good questions for these two. The number one question that I like to ask people is, do you like to make lists of things that you have to do? Well, you know what? Some people like to make lists. Some people don't. Well, they say, well, you know, sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. No, you know what? J's love to make lists. And P's, yeah, they'll like to make a list, but then they'll lose the list halfway through the day. So it's not really as important to them. But what I tell people is, all right, so if you kind of don't really want to acknowledge what you are, let me ask you this. Let's say you were going down of your to-do for the day. And if you did something that was not on your list, would you write it down on the list just so you could cross it off? You're excited when you got something done. So you're going to write it on the list because that is a confirmation of your accomplishment and your success. A perceiver would say, no, I probably would have lost my list halfway through the day, just because life is so unpredictable. Okay, that leads me to the second question. Are you more excited at the beginning of a project or the end? Perceivers really like to start new things and they like to try new things and they have a whole bunch of energy at the beginning. But as they get further and further along, they lose some of their momentum. And you know what? They'll probably have a lot of unfinished business. Well, a judger would say, I'm not going to start a project unless I know for a fact that I will be able to successfully execute all the things. And so in the beginning, you're like, okay, get this done. And then as they get through it and as they build their momentum at the end, they're so excited to the end. They see the finish line and they're going to win when they complete it and they're finishing it. And if someone said, well, okay, but we're going to stop now before you finish. They're like, no, I can't. I can't stop until I finish. If I stop before I finish, I'll go crazy. Okay, then you're probably a J. And this is the third question I love to ask people. When you have an appointment at 3:30 in the afternoon, how important is it for you to be on time? Well, everyone will say, well, of course it's important to be on time. Well, how about this question? If you knew just because of certain circumstances like transportation issues that you were going to be 3 or 4 minutes late, how much would that bother you? Well, a perceiver would be comfortable saying, well, it's okay. 3 or 4 minutes isn't bad. And hey, besides, the party doesn't start till I get there anyway. It might not have started on time anyway, so I'm not going to lose a lot of stress over it. A J would say, it would drive me absolutely insane. And I cannot stand people who do that when it is, you know, they don't even care. And then I'd say, okay, so would you rather be 57 minutes early or 3 minutes late? They'd say, well, obviously 57 minutes early, 3 minutes late is, it's completely irresponsible. Okay. You're probably a J. That's a really good thing to know. And one of the other questions that I like to ask people is, how important are the rules for you to know? Yeah, that's a very important question because perceivers see rules as guidelines, general concepts and principles. Judgers see them as hard, fast laws. And the last question, when you break a rule, how hard are you on yourself? A perceiver would say, well, if I wasn't caught, then it wasn't really a problem, was it? And a judger would say, no, if I broke a rule, I would punish myself, even if no one else. And you know what? In fact, if you didn't punish me, I would lose respect for you because you're not doing your job. Things need to be enforced. Okay, so E or I is your first letter. S or N is your second letter. T or F is your third letter. P or J is your last letter. Well, that could be 16 different personalities. That's a lot of personality. So what I would help these people in these facilities do is figure out, you know what, how much of what you're doing right now is not who you truly are. It's just what life and circumstances have dictated to you to do. Okay, what you do is not who you are. You might have mastered a lot of the skills that are not your true nature, but guess what? That's probably a big part of the reason why you're not successful in your life. And now some people could be successful having a good job that pays a lot of money with prestige, but if they're not happy, then they're not successful. That's the bottom line. And so when I teach people, how do you move through your life? One of the things that I have people in my coaching program say is, what is your life? Well, let's take a look at functionality as an overview. Even though there are 16 personalities, there are 4 levels of function. There's the basic level, There's a little bit intermediate level, there's the advanced level, and there's a really enlightened level and fulfilled level. But there's four levels of all of those activities. One is called the dominant, one is the auxiliary, one is the tertiary, and one is the inferior. Now, you're going to have to do things that are not your true nature, but again, doing them in your true nature's way is a huge part of that success and that personal fulfillment in your life. Do you want the people in our world to have access to the information that not only says to them, yeah, you can succeed, but this is how to do it? Great story. My first client, he actually came to me and he said, what do you do? I'm curious. I've seen you here. And I say, I'm a life coach. And he said, well, what is that? And I said, oh my gosh, I don't even have a sales pitch yet inside myself. I'm sitting here thinking, okay, this is a life coach. I said, you know what? I teach people how to succeed in life. A coach tells people how to score. They give them the strategy, they give them the equipment, and they give them the support to make sure they have their goal, whatever that is, and they reach that goal successfully. And I thought, wow, that's pretty good. I think I'm going to stick with that. And he said, okay, so you just teach people how to be happy. I said, yes, you know what? I don't necessarily agree with the mental health system in the United States of America in this year, right? Because a lot of it is trying to fix what's wrong. I teach you how to maximize what's right. And he said, well, then you know what? Then let me ask you this, okay? Because I'm not going to hire you yet. Why don't you tell me this? I had a great family, right, growing up, because yeah, he grew up in a Mormon family and they are very family oriented people. He was never abused. He had a great job. He was actually the district attorney. He had great money because he saved up. He was very good looking. So he didn't have any problem getting women. He said, if you can tell me why on paper my entire life is completely perfect and I'm not happy, I'll pay you. And I'll tell people about you. I said, great, because I'm new to the area. I had just moved to Phoenix. And he said, yeah, I'll give you an honest look. And I said, okay. So the first thing I did was I figured out his personality. He was an INTJ. You know what? He was actually doing the work of an ENTP. Now, you know what? It's good because as an NT, he was doing something he was very, very good at. But you know what? He was doing a P job in an extroverted way. You can't do that. I said, you need to find something that will let you sit and reflect because your dominant function is intuition. It's not thinking. Yes, you have to do things in an intuitive way because you're an N, and you have to do some things in a thinking way because you're a thinker. But the last letter of your personality says that you need to do your intuition four times more than your thinking. And he went, that makes perfect sense. You're absolutely right. I need to just go with my nature and do what's easiest and most natural for me. And I said, yeah. And you know what? He ended up becoming a professor in a university. Now, I'll tell you why that was better than being a lawyer, because he was only doing his extroverted intuition for about 3 hours a day, teaching classes, sometimes 4, 5, 6 hours a day, teaching other groups. But that gave him time to sit in an office and do a lot of writing and preparing and planning. And then all of this stuff that was going on inside of his head. And he didn't have to interact with anybody. It was great. Then the time that he was interacting with people, he was amazing without being exhausted. And the fact that the law is not structured, believe it or not, yes, there are a lot of logistics, there are a lot of policies and procedures, but it's so inconsistent in the principles of enforcement. That drove him crazy too, because he was a J. Well, you know what? When you're talking about school, there's not a whole lot of room for, well, we'll do it different for this student. We'll do it different for that student. No, it's very broad. It's very general. It's universal. And it is consistent. Wow, that's really great. A little thing like that. It's still an NT job, but you need to do it in a J instead of a P way. Okay, so when I told people over at the shelters when I was living there, I said, look, you're so close to what you could be doing. Just tweak this one little thing and you'll take off. And they said, wow, no one ever knew that about me. That was my dirty little secret. You're telling me I'm not mentally ill for wanting to do that? I said, no, you're a sensory judger. You know what? You just come from a family that's full of intuitive feelers or intuitive thinkers. And so they don't like when you say certain things to them. But if you employ that sensory judge or functionality in this particular venue at that particular angle, then you can go ahead and just go, my job doesn't have to be work. It can actually be my livelihood. It can be my passion. The people on the street, they deserve to know who they truly are. In fact, one of my recent clients, he was in his mid-60s and he said, okay, you know what? I think I'm ready for a healthy relationship because what I've been doing hasn't been healthy and it hasn't been real. And I said, okay, so let's figure out where you are inside. And when you're relating to other people, what do you prefer? What do you have to offer? And what are you trying to create that's not really there? And one of the favorite questions that I like to ask people is, what's actually more toxic for you as a soul? To do things that you're not, or not do the things that you are? What's more toxic? What's more detrimental and really and truly harmful for you? Well, you know what? As you learn these things about functionality, you will find out that the only way you can do something that is the opposite of your nature is by repressing and suffocating and denying your true nature. You can't do that. And you know what? The world doesn't deserve that. You are born with gifts and talents and strengths and abilities that the world needs. And not everybody believes this, but science has shown we are all born with a personality. They've even done ultrasounds and said, oh, look, this little person has this kind of inclination and disposition. Yes, because nature is very selective. Some people call nature God. I call nature God. Very selective about what things need to be done. So let's do the more things that need to be done. Give the skills and talents and abilities to people who want to do things. Sometimes it's the behind the scenes, the thinking and the feeling and the inspiring and the encouraging that needs to be done to motivate people to do things. Well, then let's give some people that ability to inspire and motivate and create. People like the attorney, my first client, he had an amazing ability to come up with an idea that one idea a year could completely and totally change the life or lives of someone individually as an introvert or in an institution as an instructor. That alone satisfied him. You know what? He wasn't doing something impressive every day. My husband, who's the ESTP, he does 5 or 10 things a day that make people go, wow, that was really cool. And then they forget. They immediately forget because it was a menial thing. It was a mundane thing. But you know what? He got it done and he got it done well. And that was impressive and appreciated. That's the other thing that I want my viewers and listeners to think about today. We need to appreciate the people in the world, the people around us, and especially the people in these extenuating circumstances, these hopefully temporary transitional situations of potentially homelessness or unemployment, and say, look, whatever you need in order to be the 100% you that you genuinely are, let me know. I will give you the 2 or 3 little things because I'll know what they are because you will know what they are. Some people call that mindfulness. Some people call it awareness. Yeah, it's being smart about life and about yourself and generous to the world because you're allowing yourself to be who you truly are in the most natural way possible. That will give you more energy to keep going rather than take it away from you just to survive. So the couple of things that I want to explain to people too is that when we have the functionality, one thing is to say, you know what, my life demands that I do something that's not my nature. Okay. One of the things you need to know is the activity might not be your function. Do it in your function's way. Okay, like for example, I don't do feeler things very well. And my children knew immediately, literally from leaving my body, that I'm not a feeler. Okay, but I still had to do feeler things because as a mother, if you don't feel with and for and to your children, you're going to hurt them. You're literally going to harm them mentally and emotionally and physically. So I thought, okay, so feeler things that I have to do, which is genuinely feel and care about their pain and suffering and give them the things that they need. I'm like, you are really annoying. But I thought, okay, so, but I can't really do feeler things naturally until I get good at them. Okay, then I'll do them in a thinker way. Okay, so what I'll be doing is when I go out with them, I will be, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take them to the store and I'm going to explain to them the ingredients on the label, right? Of the food that they like. And I can say to them, okay, you know what? You like this particular product. And so when you eat it, that makes you really happy, huh? And you know what? The things that are in here are going to make you stronger and healthier. And that's going to make you even more happy. And when you're more happy, that I'm going to be happy. We're going to have so much fun because there's vitamin C and calcium in this. That's what I'm thinking inside myself, but I'm getting excited. So I'm still doing feeling things, but in a thinking way. And I'll give the example too, because I have a few minutes left. When I was trying to teach my children how to be spiritual people, okay, my oldest is an ESFJ. My second one is an ISTP, and my little baby girl is an ENFJ. And I thought, what in the world? How do I teach them how to be spiritual, to have a relationship with God, to have, you know, standards for their behavior? And okay, so one of the things, and I was even talking to my kids about this the other night, that I told my oldest son was, okay, as an SJ, I know he needs to know the rules and the standards and the expectations and the guidelines. And okay, so I said, look, this is God. This is the Bible. These are the rules. And if you don't obey the rules, then you're going to fail and you're going to be miserable. And he went, okay, shh, go away. I need to find the rules. This kid was doing it better than half of the adults in our village from the time he was 4, 5, 6 years old. And even to the point where he was raising his younger brother and sister going, Mom, you are really bad at this. I need to go over and take, you know, go ahead and take over for you. Okay. Okay. My daughter was an ENFJ, and that's a humanitarian purpose, someone who loves people. And so I thought, okay, so telling her the rules isn't really going to help because she doesn't necessarily care about the rules unless it's for a humanitarian purpose. Got it. So I said, you know what, sweetheart? God loves you very much and he wants to see you happy and he loves it when you're happy. And you know what? This is the book, the secret book of how to do things that are happy. He's telling you how to succeed because he wants you to be happy and that makes his heart rejoice. And she said, oh, so if I follow the rules, then God and the angels too, right? They're going to be looking at me. I said, yeah, they're going to see you and they're going to get excited when you're successful and they're going to be helping you and supporting you to make sure you continue going down the right path in the right way for the right reason. You just need to remember that every time you do something good, you're going to make him happy. And I thought, oh, you know what? I got to keep going with that. And honey, when you do something wrong, you actually make him very sad. She said, oh, when I do bad things, it makes him sad. It actually hurts him. I said, yeah, because he wants you to be happy too. So when you're not happy, it actually hurts his heart. Okay. Okay. That's it. That was actually more powerful for her. All right. We can stick with that. And you know what? I got to tell you, even to this day, she's probably the most spiritual one of all my children. But here's the one that was tough for me. My middle one, the ISTP. Yeah, no, he pretty much flips off the rule book. Sensory perceivers, you tell them the rules, they will literally go into the opposite just because you told them to do it. Even if they were in the process of doing it, the minute you tell them to do it, they're going to go to the opposite just to show you that they don't have to be told what to do. Okay, so the rule book didn't. And then you know what? He's an introverted thinker, so he doesn't care about people's feelings. So say, well, you know what? It makes God happy and it makes me happy. And he like, ask me if I care. And I thought, oh my God, what am I going to do? Okay, I got it. I said, you know what? Satan and the demons, they are watching you and they're talking about you. They're looking at you and they're going, look, I bet you this one's going to do this and this. And they're sitting there waiting for you to fail. And every time you do, they're laughing. They're practically like probably exchanging bets, right? Yeah, we knew we'd do it. We knew it. It's like, so if I do the right thing, it's going to make him crazy. I said, yeah. And when you do the wrong thing, he's laughing. He's like, really? He thinks he's going to do that to me? I don't think so. So he ended up getting baptized at a very young age. He was the first one baptized. And he's the one saying, I'm going to do the right thing just because no one's going to force me to do the bad one. I'm like, okay, you know what? That's what I had to do. What I want to help people understand about their true nature is you can get from point A to point B in 100 different ways. You know what? Do the one that's most natural for you. What I'm going to be going down to Phoenix, literally my flight leaves in a couple hours, to Phoenix to help the people in the shelter for the next week is get familiar with the campaign. And I'm finishing up the syllabus for the 12-hour class that the Better Business Bureau has given me permission to use their room, literally in the Better Business Bureau building, I can have the office for 12 hours a month because I'm accredited. Okay, what I'm going to be doing with them is giving them the class, the information that they need. Knowledge is power. Power comes with responsibility, and responsibility demands accountability. I've always told people there is no neutral energy. You are either positive or you're negative. Indifference, which is the absence of anything, is negative. So everything that you do when you are indifferent is destructive. You have to start caring. The question you need to ask yourself is, what motivates you to get other people the help and support and resources that they need to succeed? Because when they succeed, they create positive power, and that affects other people. Our mood is contagious. When they have the success and they say, you know what, I want to be a part of what you're doing to make the homeless shelter better, that continues to propel the positive effects of the good energy that we create when we come together. Ask yourself, what do you want to do? What do you want to help with? Do you want to directly participate or just give $10 to a campaign instead of $10 to someone on the corner of the street who's homeless? Think about that and ask yourself. I'll be going through this again next week, just kind of in an overview, because we're going to be covering a different topic next week. But if you have any questions, my number is 425-280-8463. And if you do have questions, then you can call the station at 888-627-6008. That's BBS Radio. Thank you so much today for watching The Power of Synergy. And again, I'm BBS Radio. I'm your host, Gabrielle Cardone.